Okay.
Today is Saturday, January 28th, 2023. This is part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Frank Barrios. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Frank. How are you today?
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Thank you. Frank, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, you do.
Thank you very much. Frank, what year were you born and where were you born?
I was born in 1942 in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay. And what were your folks doing in Phoenix?
I come from a pioneer family to Arizona. On my mother's side, my grandfather came from Yugoslavia in 1878 into Arizona. And then he married a Mexican woman, Dolores Martinez, and then started his family here in Phoenix.
Okay.
On my father's side, my dad was born in Southern California, and his parents were Mexican citizens.
Okay.
Who lived in Tecate, which is right on the border, and part-time lived in Tijuana also.
Okay. And let's go back to your mother's father. And mother, father from Yugoslavia, and mother Dolores Martin. Do you have any idea how they met there in Phoenix?
Yes, I do. I'm kind of known as a historian as well as other things.
Super.
Martinez, let me give you a quick history of Dolores Martinez. Her parents, who was Jesus and Rosa Martinez, had a ranch in where Descanso is today, which is right outside of San Diego. And she was baptized in the old church in San Diego.
Wow.
And her first marriage was to George Wheeler Schofield, who was a doctor in the Civil War. And he married her, and I believe he worked for the railroad. And at the time of his death, he was in Mexico working on the railroads there.
Okay.
And he had one son, who he named after Ulysses S. Grant, because he said he knew him. And so the one son he had, he called Ulysses Schofield.
Okay.
Who was born in Mexico in Santa Ana, which is a little town today, about, I don't know, 80 miles or so south of the border, and south of Nogales.
Yes.
And as soon as his son was born, he died. He had tuberculosis. That's why he came out to Arizona and was hoping to have a cure. But he was a doctor.
Okay.
And after he died, my grandmother was a widow with a small child.
Wow.
Ulysses Schofield. Her brother, who was a freighter, he freighted. You've seen the picture of the 20 mules carrying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's what he did. He freighted. And his name was Octaviano Martinez. And he was killed by Apaches.
Okay. Where?
And but he did exactly the same thing as my grandfather did. My grandfather came into Arizona in 1878 and decided to do what you'd call freighting. And he started a freighting business from, it appears he freighted from Wickenburg to Tombstone, Arizona.
Okay.
And in fact, I don't have the exact date with me, but either 1881 or 82, he filed for citizenship in the United States And that was one of those 2 years is when they had the gunfight at the OK Corral.
Okay.
And so my grandfather was in Tombstone during those years. And he, the best I can determine, he was a very good friend of Octaviano. And probably Octaviano introduced him to his sister.
Oh, my. So, Frank, I'm just trying to think about this, freighting from Wickenburg to Tombstone. Now, the railroad at the time, had the Southern Pacific been put in place yet?
I'm not sure. I know that the first railroad in Arizona would go down towards Tucson.
Right.
And then also there was one that went to Maricopa.
So he would have been servicing the mines in Tombstone and the mines up toward Wickenburg Congress, that area over there?
Probably. Okay. I don't know that much of his routes, but I do know that I have pictures of his home here in downtown Phoenix, where he had a lot of the old wagons that he hauled material with still there in his home.
Okay.
But I don't know exactly what his route was, but I'm always assuming it would have been between Wickenburg and... But I know that he did file for citizenship in Tombstone, Arizona.
Oh, wow.
And then several years later, filed for, was granted his citizenship to the United States.
Okay.
And my guess is, and again, I don't have any absolute proof, but Octaviano did the same business, and I was told they were good friends. And
nice.
He probably introduced them to his sister, who was Dolores Martinez Schofield.
All right. Yeah, yeah.
And then they married, and he had five children.
Okay.
Three girls, two boys. My mother was the last child to be born to that union. And the two boys died when they were children.
Oh, my. Okay.
And so the only ones that survived were the three girls.
Okay.
And my mother was the youngest of the three.
And where did your mom grow up?
Right under Chase Field. That's where my grandfather's home was.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I think it was 404 South 4th Street, which would have been, I tell you the exact location, is when you go up to Chase Field to pay for the tickets to go in,
mm-hmm.
right there when you're paying the tickets was where my grandfather's home was.
Oh, my gosh. Huh.
And but before he did that, he finally gave up freighting and decided to move into Phoenix. That was after he got married. And he had almost an entire section of land around 24th Street and the river bottom area.
Okay.
Where the airport is today.
Okay.
He farmed that for several years and then finally decided to move closer to town. That's when he bought the house or built it. I'm not sure which one.
Okay.
But he and it was right on 4th Street and what would later be called Gold Alley after my grandfather.
Okay.
My grandfather's real name was Martin Slater with a Z. But when he came to the United States, he decided to Americanize his last name, and he called himself Gold, Martin Gold. And my understanding is that Slater translated to English means one who works with gold.
Oh, okay.
So he did that, and he became Martin Gold. And I often tell people that sometimes in the historical stuff you'll see his name spelled G-O-U-L-D.
Hmm.
Well, that's because of his accent. They said, "What's your name?" Martin Gold.
Uh-huh.
And they wrote it down G-O-U-L-D. Martin could not read or write. He never learned to read or write. All the documents I have, he puts an X on it.
Wow.
But he was very bright. He knew he could speak eight languages.
Wow.
Fluently. And he was very entrepreneurial in what he did. Well, when he finally moved to the downtown Phoenix area, he sold the property he had out there and moved to the downtown Phoenix area. His first business that he ran into, rather than farming, he provided custom harvesting. He brought in one of the first Case factories, tractors into the valley, and would contract with farmers to cut their wheat.
Okay.
And he would go out into the field for weeks and months, or weeks, I guess, and harvest the fields and package up all the wheat and so on for the farmers, and they would pay him for the harvesting.
Wow, Frank, I always thought of Phoenix as being a big citrus producer, not as being a wheat producer.
No, no, the citrus was more of the Glendale area.
Okay.
And Phoenix was, the farming that occurred in Phoenix was a lot different than the Glendale area.
Okay. And this was using...
he used a Case tractor you'd put the wheat in there, and it would chew it up, come up at the other end, and he would package it for the farmer.
Wow.
In fact, let me just mention, a lot of what I'm saying, I've written two books.
Okay.
One of them called The Mexicans of Phoenix.
Nice.
And a lot of what I'm telling you is in that book.
Okay, thank you.
And that was an Arcadia book. I wrote it about 25 years ago, but it's available on Arcadia Publishing. It's called The Mexicans of Phoenix.
Awesome.
The other book I just finished in 21, came out in 21, was The History of the Phoenix St. Vincent de Paul, which I'm the immediate past president of St. Vincent de Paul here in Phoenix.
Nice.
And that book is out there also by Arcadia Publishing.
Okay. Very good.
But anyway, my grandfather also, as he continued, started buying up property. At his death, he owned quite a bit of property in downtown Phoenix.
And I want to go back for a minute to Slater. That's Z-L-A-Y-T-O-R? Is that the original?
No, Z-L-A-T-A-R.
Z-L-A-T-A-R. Okay.
Right.
Got it. Okay. And so thank you.
And then his brother, named Anton, came from Yugoslavia and joined them here in Phoenix. And the two of them became partners in this entrepreneurial quest to expand. And he became very wealthy. He was a good businessman and bought a lot of land in downtown Phoenix.
Okay.
And the primary right around his home where Chase Field is, he owned quite a bit of land in there, which would later be called La Marqueta, which was the market area where the produce would come into Phoenix. They would off the trains, because the railroad track goes right through this area.
Okay, great.
And they named... They used to have several alleys in this area, China Alley, and Gold Alley was one of them, named after my grandfather.
Neat. And so the produce was coming in on the rail, but also probably leaving on the rail that was produced in the valley.
That's correct. And he owned a big chunk of land there. He owned half a block in the around Van Buren between 4th and 5th Street, all of that area, half block there that faced Van Buren was owned by my grandfather, and he owned property up on Van Buren. He owned property all through the valley. And like I said, when he passed, he died in 1931. He was a very wealthy man with a lot of land in Phoenix.
Okay. And what was your mom's first name?
Dolores.
Okay.
And my mother grew up in, my grandfather's house was in a Hispanic neighborhood.
Okay.
It was, everybody spoke Spanish. My mother's first language was Spanish.
Okay.
She was born and raised here in downtown Phoenix, but her mother And all of the children she played with in this the Gold Alley area, if you will, were all Hispanic.
Hmm.
This was around the turn of the century. My mother, I'm not sure what year she was born, but probably around 1904, 1905, somewhere in there she was born.
And she was named after her mom.
That's correct.
Nice.
And her first language was Spanish. Her second language was English.
Okay.
And my father, of course, was raised in Mexico, went to the United States for high school, and spoke. Both my parents were perfectly bilingual, but the first language of my family was Spanish.
Nice.
Yeah. When I grew up, my family all spoke in Spanish was their first language, and but they all also spoke very good English.
And your dad's side of the family out in California, how long had they been in the California area?
No, on my dad's side.
Yeah.
My grandfather, his father, was a Mexican citizen.
Oh, okay.
And lived in northern Mexico around. I think he had a business in Tijuana, Mexico.
Okay, got it.
And his wife, my grandmother, was raised in the Tecate area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And her parents had huge landownings in Tecate.
Did they go back to the days of the Spanish land grants? Did they go that far back?
No. In fact, my understanding is his name was Ignacio Espinosa.
Okay.
And
how do you spell that?
Well, let me double check. I'm trying to remember his name right now. It's I'll have to look it up.
No worries. I just for the transcribers, okay, I'm thinking somebody's going to want to spell this. So.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I'll have to get back to you on that. But
okay.
He actually owned land in the U.S. side
mm-hmm.
of the border.
Okay.
Which was Campo. Campo was the U.S. side with nothing there but a store.
Okay.
But on the Mexican side was the town of Tecate, Baja California.
Okay.
And that was a fairly large town. That's where they make the Tecate beer, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Well, he farmed in the U.S. side for many years and then decided to cross into Mexico, and he bought up a huge section of land in Mexico and farmed. And today, my descendants own property in Tecate.
Okay.
There are many of them because he had a big family. I think he had like 10, 12 kids somewhere in there.
Okay.
And most of them, the descendants are still in Tecate. That's Baja California.
And what was your
California.
What was your father's first name?
Alfonso.
And how did Alfonso meet Dolores?
I don't know.
Okay.
Other than he was in Phoenix, and they met and fell in love, got
mm-hmm.
married.
Cool.
And but in 41, I believe, so I was born a year later.
And what was Alfonso doing in Phoenix at the time?
At the time, he did various things. He would eventually. He was in law enforcement was his big thing.
Okay.
During World War II, he served in World War II and was an MP, military police officer.
Yep.
And his job was guarding German prisoners.
Okay.
When he got back from World War II, he had a few odd jobs, but eventually went to work for the state liquor and license control.
Oh, okay.
And would specialize on narcotics.
Okay.
And he, mainly because he spoke Spanish and he could deal with a lot of the traffic from Mexico that was bringing dope into the United States.
Got it.
And my dad worked with them for many, many years. And then towards the end of his career, he worked for the U.S. Marshal. He worked for guarding prisoners and so on. So you can say my dad's career was primarily law enforcement.
Okay. So I'm going to go back to World War II for a minute with your father. Did he go overseas? Did he go to the European theater?
No, he stayed in the United States. He used to guard German prisoners, but they brought many German prisoners here to the United States. And,
right.
And my dad was a guard, guarded German prisoners, the military police here in the United States.
And there's a story of some German prisoners thinking they were going to float the Gila to escape. Is that right? From one of the
That's correct.
Phoenix area.
That is correct.
Of course, there's no water in the Gila then. And
they have a special museum at the military park at Papago Park.
Yeah.
And if you go through it, they show where they saw that on a map that there was a river there. They escaped. They even had a raft. They were going to float down the Salt to the Gila.
That's
and then
right.
Follow the Gila all the way to the Colorado and then out to the ocean. And they got to the Salt, found out it was dry, and, of course, they captured most of them.
Right. And was your father, as a military policeman, was he here in Arizona,
no.
or was he further away?
No. He was further away. He was all over the place.
Okay.
I know one of the things, one time he would be on transporting prisoners from one place to another as
Got
military
it.
Police.
Okay. All right. And then, what were your earliest recollections of growing up in Phoenix?
Well, I was a I consider myself Mexican American
mm-hmm.
family.
Mm-hmm.
As such, and there was a lot of discrimination here in Phoenix. But we were not poor. As I mentioned to you, we had, our family had money.
Okay.
Because of my grandfather. And but I always remember when I had a good, I can't say I struggled or anything because we always had money, but there was a lot of, prior to World War II and even into after World War II, there was, you know, in the early 20s, you had the Ku Klux Klan. There was a lot of issues of segregation.
Yes.
I think, and again, I am not saying I had a lot of it because with the money we had, we did not live in a barrio area. We had a home, 809 North 7th Street, which was north of Van Buren. Most of the barrio areas were south of Van Buren.
Okay.
And, it was an area where there was a lot of rich Hispanics living there also, by the way.
Okay.
In that general area. And I grew up there, went to St. Mary's Grammar School.
Okay.
And then from there, I went to Brophy High School, and then I graduated and went to Phoenix College, got a degree from there, and then I went to ASU.
Okay.
And,
okay. Wait. Hang on.
Okay.
Let's go. Let's not run too fast here. St. Mary's Grammar School. What was that like?
Well, it was that was right in the late 40s, right after World War II.
Okay.
And there was a lot of racial tension, even though St. Mary's Grammar School was integrated. You had blacks, Mexicans, and whites, but there had been several issues with St. Mary's on where they had had some segregation against Hispanics, one in 1915, and then when I always tell the story, when I went to sign up for St. Mary's, I was told I couldn't go there because of my last name. I had to go to Immaculate Heart. Immaculate Heart was created as a segregated school, Catholic school.
Hmm.
You had St. Mary's and Immaculate Heart, which were just a little ways apart from each other.
Okay.
And again, you'll read all this in my book. In my book, I go into detail on this.
Well, let's not go into detail, but I just have one kind of quick question because I kind of perked up and was really inspired that St. Mary's was trying to operate integrated, and then my inspiration kind of evaporated when you mentioned that Immaculate Heart was segregated. And I was like, oh, So what was the thought there of the people running the schools? How would you run one segregated and one integrated?
Well, the according to Father Victor, was the pastor at the time.
Okay.
And by the way, that very incident that occurred to me also occurred to many other Hispanics who remember the first incident that created a Mecklen Heart was in 1915.
Okay, okay.
And many were furious. They were just, it made the paper, and there was people picketing outside St. Mary's. But Father Victor was confronted, why are you doing this now, in the late 1940s? And he said, there were too few students at Immaculate Heart and too many at St. Mary's. So,
well, that says something, that the parents were like, no, we want our children to grow up in an integrated school. Huh,
that's
interesting.
Correct. That's correct, but that was his answer.
Okay.
But this time the bishop interceded, and the bishop out of Tucson came back on Victor and said, you will integrate the school, this will stop immediately, and he did. And I went to St. Mary's for 8 years.
Wow, lovely. And so there was some tension there, but I'm assuming, you know, children are children, and they often miss that. So some of the kids will pick up their parents' biases, but some won't, and it's a great place for kids of...
No, a lot of fistfights.
Oh, okay, so never mind, that didn't work. Okay.
But basically, we were integrated.
Okay.
After the bishop interceded, and there was many Mexicans, many blacks, not many, a few blacks, and Anglo kids, mostly
okay.
Anglos. But again, it was integrated, but there was tension, and I have to somewhat laugh. But in my time, when I was young, you got in a fist fight. But nobody ever thought about guns. But today it's a different world.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It is for that. So then, in Brophy's High School, was that integrated as well?
Oh, yeah. No. That was a different set of priests, too. St. Mary's was run by Franciscans. Very conservative, they wore wool robes and generally were considered a more conservative, but they came very early to the valley.
Okay.
And built the church that you see today. And then there was Brophy was run by Jesuits, who are
okay.
more progressive.
All right.
And I went 4 years there to Brophy, and it was integrated. I think that there weren't many blacks, and Brophy was in North Phoenix, where St. Mary's was in the central. It was in the center of downtown Phoenix and was more of a integrated but inner-city school.
Okay.
And Brophy was North Phoenix, and there was a lot of rich kids there.
Okay.
But also there were kids from South Phoenix that attended Brophy again. Many wanted a Jesuit education versus Franciscan, but generally speaking, very little issues dealing with segregation at Brophy. It was integrated, but I think there was maybe one black student in the whole school. Several Mexicans, there were several rich Mexicans from Mexico that were boarding there. They had a boarding.
Oh, okay.
Place but I went 4 years and graduated in 1960 from Brophy.
Okay. I was thinking about your summers. I'm assuming you had your summers off. Did you work? What did you do in your summers?
Well, one of the summer, I did whatever, any job that was around, I would do. I even picked cotton once.
Okay.
And I remember getting a job one time. They were hiring people to set up, they had an ice campaign here, and I helped set up the deals for that. But probably the biggest job I had was my first year at Phoenix College. I got a job in Flagstaff for the summer, fighting forest fires and clearing forests for the Forest Service in Flagstaff. So I lived an entire summer, 3 months of the summer, in Flagstaff, Arizona, and working for the Forest Service.
And that would have been so after you graduated in 1960.
That's correct.
Let's go back. Hang on a second. I'm going to drag you back a little bit.
Okay.
Because I want to ask you about that. But before we get there, was it assumed in your family that when you go to college, or was college mentioned in your family as you were in high school? Was this something that your parents were driving you toward, or you were interested in? How did that work out?
I would say they didn't push it, but I would have been the first one on both sides of my family to get a college degree.
Okay.
And but they did not push it. I had a very good childhood. I enjoyed high school.
Okay.
They didn't particularly push it, but Brophy was considered a pre-college high school.
Okay. What subjects did you really enjoy most in your junior and senior years of high school?
I can quote a priest who used to say, "Barrios, you're the only student I've ever had that gets a better grade in Latin than he does in English."
Oh, wow.
I took Latin, and I took mathematics and English, and I was not a brilliant student, but I was like a C student. But I did take Latin, and of course I took Spanish, of course, which was I got an A in that, and I took Latin.
It's almost like you're taking after your grandfather on your mother's side, who knew so many languages.
Right. But keep in mind that Brophy was a pre-college type high school.
Okay. Were there...
So it wasn't just... But my parents never pushed me, said you have to go to college or anything like that. No one in my either side of my family that I know of had a college degree. I was the very first one ever to get a college degree.
Were there any of the fathers that were there at Brophy's? Did any of them really inspire you? Did they push you toward college? Did they inspire you to head in that direction?
Oh. They were very strict, I know that.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like today. They would half of my teachers in both grammar school and high school would probably be in jail today if they operated the way they did.
Okay.
They were very, very strict. Discipline was the main factor. But they did generally tend to push you towards college overall. Okay. It wasn't what you would call a... You all have to go to college. No, but they generally, like I said, Brophy was a pre-college type high school.
Okay, and then what were you thinking in, say, your junior and senior year, kind of looking forward as young men and women do in toward the end of high school about what they want to do when they get out of high school? What were your thoughts at the time?
I had no idea.
Okay.
I graduated from Brophy not knowing what I wanted to do. I can tell you, history, because of my family's background, was always important to me.
Okay.
I thought maybe I could become a historian.
Oh, wow.
But then I voted against that because it just seemed like they struggled to make a living.
Yes.
And so then I had a lot of my family installed in me a lot of common sense.
Okay.
And that's something I thank to this day for my family. They, both my mom and dad, had immense amounts of common sense. And,
nice.
And they, I ended up thinking maybe engineering would be what, and I'm not an artist type. I'm not a musical type. So engineering was more towards what I thought would be a way to go. But what type of engineering, I had no idea.
Okay.
And
okay, so let's
I
go.
Also,
sorry, go ahead.
But, well, the other thing that influenced me a lot was I had my aunt's three sons were older than me. They all served in World War II.
Okay.
And they loved aunt, and they brought me into hunting.
Oh, wow. Tell me about that.
They were all, well, two of them anyway, that had the bigger influence on me, would hunt everything, deer, javelina, all of this. And they always took me with them. I became like a third brother to them.
Okay.
And then I also, the thing was very important to me was the Boy Scouts. I continued being a member of the Boy Scouts of St. Mary's.
Did you get your Eagle Scout?
The only thing is I had an ear problem and couldn't swim.
Oh.
So I got all the way short of the Eagle.
Oh.
But I had 30 some merit badges, and I was a senior patrol leader. I did everything you could with scouts to join the explorers. Everything. I was really big with the scouts, except I never got my Eagle because of the problem I had with my ear.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but every in those days they didn't give you any. You had to have a badge that included the swimming.
I'm going to go out on a tangent for a minute just to check something out here. The Phoenix Explorers were led for a while by a guy who was a aviator and a parachuter, and I can't remember his name, but he ended up with the Explorers Post making a giant sign that said Phoenix with an arrow for planes out in the desert. They used rocks and lime and took a while on that. Did you ever hear about that? Were you too old? Did you miss that, or had you heard of that?
No, I had not heard of that.
Okay, no
Don't
worries.
Don't forget that we're talking the early 60s now.
Right, so okay.
And
it was the 50s when they did this. It was sometime
well,
in the 50s.
Let's see, 12, what's 12 from plus 42? That's
42, 52, 54, 53, 54, 12,
okay,
and 42,
Right, I joined the Boy Scouts when I turned 12.
Okay, so 54.
And then as soon as I could, because you had to be a certain age to be an explorer, I became an explorer.
So I bet you just missed that.
Right, and then I continued with the early years were with St. Mary's, and then we all in mass went over to St. Matthew's and joined the scouts there.
Okay.
Used to go to Camp Geronimo every year, and a lot of stories of my stay at Geronimo.
Tell me one or two. Let's go to Camp Geronimo for a minute.
Well, I loved it. I thought that was great. We'd go there.
Where
and,
was it?
It was in the first Geronimo. There's a new Geronimo today.
Okay.
But it wasn't the original Geronimo. Was you know where that? Oh, what's it called? Where one of the major creeks runs through the Mogollon Rim up on the rim, and there's a motel and a location right there on the river, and right there upstream from that location is where the first Geronimo was, where we used to
this is up on the Salt or the Gila or the Verde. Where Where are we?
No, here? it was Tonto Creek.
Tonto Creek. Okay, thank you.
And it would have been one of the main tributaries to Tonto Creek, and I can't think of the name of it now.
So it would have been cooler than Phoenix in the summer.
Oh, absolutely. And what we'd do is we would go 1 week to Camp Geronimo.
Okay.
And we would rent. There would be a bus. We'd have our bags packed, and they would take us up to the rim. We'd spend 1 week in tents, living in tents there at Camp Geronimo.
Okay.
And it was a great, great time. As scouts, for little kids, Boy Scouts, and even up into the Explorers, we looked forward to that summer at Camp Geronimo. And then during my time that I was there, they also changed the location and closed down. I can tell you exactly, because I got lost one time, that original Camp Geronimo was just downstream from the... they had a trout growing facility there on that creek that I can't think of the name.
Oh, a hatchery there.
Hatchery. They had a fish hatchery.
Okay.
Just upstream from camp, the original Camp Geronimo.
Okay.
And one time we went to visit it, and we started back late, and we got lost. And we ended up getting to Camp Geronimo late at night. And so happened my mother and father had come to visit me there.
Oh, no.
My mother was crying, and I was embarrassed to no end that my mother was crying.
Oh.
Because I thought we were lost in the woods.
Well, that shows that she cared about you a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's
I had
lovely.
Great parents.
Lovely.
Great parents.
Nice. What other good memories do you have of the Camp Geronimo?
Well, it was just the camaraderie and the friendship of that we had. A lot of what would you call it? I can't think of the word, but where you compete, a lot of competitiveness with the other scouts. Like, we never liked St. Agnes. They were there, and we'd a lot of arguments between St. Agnes and St. Mary's. Because they were scouts at St. Agnes, we were scouts at St. Mary's.
Okay.
But also, they just generally, we were kids, and we just had a great time. It was one of the highlights of my life was the time I spent at Geronimo, and it was just a great, great situation.
Nice. So it sounds like you really love the out of doors too.
Well, that's where it started. That's
okay.
Exactly right. I'll give you one more example with the scouts.
Please.
I remember one time we were camping in the wintertime in Prescott, and we were camping near a lake. And I remained in a tent. We were in a fairly large tent, if I remember right. And one of the kids all of a sudden started screaming, and he had melted the ice and was floating into the frozen lake.
Oh, my gosh.
And they pulled him out, dried him off, and we all laughed about it, of course.
Yeah,
But we did other times we would have overnight camps into the Bradshaw Mountains from St. Mary's. We had... Harold Hun was our original scoutmaster, and we would have these overnight, and again, that's where my love of the wilderness came from.
Did your cousins, your cousins that were hunting, did they camp out as well? Did they take you on campouts?
Oh, we would, the hunting trips were 3-4 day hunting trips.
Wow, okay.
Sometimes, I mean, we didn't just go overnight. Or one day. These were hunting trips that lasted for days.
And where would they go? Was this up in the Mogollon Rim again, or where were they going?
Everywhere.
Oh, wow.
You name it, we hunted it. The North Rim, the Kaibab, we hunted there a lot.
Oh, wow. So they actually went quite a ways.
Oh, anywhere in the state of Arizona was legitimate. And then we up on the Margaon Rim, Yarnell. We used to hunt a lot up in the Yarnell area.
Okay.
For deer, and everywhere you can think of. And that was when I was very, I had not only the Boy Scouts, but I had my cousins taking me out on hunting trips. And that's where my love of the wilderness started.
Nice, nice, really nice. So what do you remember about your first visit to the Grand Canyon?
That was in 1961.
Okay, and, so even on your trips with your cousins up to the North Rim, you hadn't gone off to, you know, gone down to the lodge down there and seen it? No, okay.
No, we had not.
Okay.
But in 61, I took a class at Phoenix College.
Okay, so hang on a second. I'm gonna back out of that because I'm trying to follow the timeline here, yeah, roughly, but we're jumping ahead past your work working in Flagstaff fighting forest fires. So let's capture that. So you graduated from high school, weren't quite sure what you were going to do, were thinking maybe engineering.
Just to let you know, I originally thought about geologic engineering.
Oh, hmm.
But I ended up changing my mind because found out that geological engineers had to go all over the world and travel, and I wanted to do something that allowed me to stay in Arizona.
Okay, nice. And so what sort of engineering were you then thinking about that would allow you to stay in the state?
The most general that I could think of would be civil.
Okay, yeah.
That was allowed for, it's engineering, but it was the biggest, widest, most general engineering I could find.
Okay, all right. And then how did you hear about the summer job opportunity with the Forest Service? Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember how I found out about it. I think one of my friends said they got an opening in Flagstaff this summer. I said, count me in, let's do it.
Huh.
And so I ended up going up there with two of my buddies from Phoenix, and we rented a room from Mrs. Yee from Flagstaff.
Okay.
She was a widow, a divorced a woman with two children, and she would rent out the top. She lived in a two-story home in Flagstaff, and she would rent out the top floor to young men who needed a room. So we rented, the three of us rented a room on the second floor of Mrs. Yee's house.
And that would be spelled Y-E-E?
Correct.
Okay. And do you remember, excuse me, roughly where in town from downtown that was?
It was south of the railroad tracks.
Okay. And then east of the lumber yard or west?
It would have been... what's the main street that when you cross the railroad tracks right through center of Flagstaff?
I'm thinking Milton, but I'm not. Let's see.
The main street.
Oh, Route 66. Of course, that's on the north side of the tracks.
No. This goes. This we're talking north south.
Santa Fe or Humphreys, and Santa Fe, are going that way. Beaver Street's going south. That would have been north and south back then. It's one way now, but back in the 60s, it would have been two way.
Exactly, Beaver Street.
Okay.
It was the first street east of Beaver.
Okay. First street east of Beaver. I'm a blank on that right now.
Well, you can look it up on a map.
Yeah.
But it's the first street east of Beaver. Mrs. Yee had a two-story, beautiful two-story house there.
Nice. Okay.
And it was south of the tracks.
And was it just south of the tracks? Is it like Phoenix Avenue there runs east and west? Because there are some...
This street ran north and south also.
Okay. There are some two-story buildings, but they're only like a block from the train track, a block and a half or so.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's where this would have been.
Those buildings are still standing then. If it's
they probably are. I haven't visited them in years.
And a flat roofed building, or was it peaked roof?
No, it was a two-story home. It had slanted roof on it.
Slanted roof. Okay. All right. And it, because
it was almost like a Victorian home.
Nice. And so the trains, you would have heard, you know, gotten used to the trains coming through town. And
oh, yeah. No, that wasn't a problem. Mm-hmm. We got mm-hmm. used to it.
Okay. And
I was just 18 years old or 19, and so not much would bother you.
Right. okay, so you had a place to stay, you and your friends, and then you would have made connections with the Forest Service offices. Were those up Fort Valley Road a little bit, a little ways out of town? Where were those? Where did you connect with the Forest Service people?
They had a office in North Flagstaff.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't remember the exact address, but. And what we did is we signed up for, it was called the Wild Bill Crew.
Okay.
And we had about 7 or 8 people in the Wild Bill Crew. And what we did is they were clearing a forest area that to make it safe for fires.
Okay.
And that's every morning we'd meet, go out to this area and chop trees, and they would mark which trees had to come down, which had to stay.
Okay.
And we had power saws, and the crew would chop down these trees so that there would be space between the trees.
Okay.
Part of an experimental forest, I think you call it.
Mm-hmm.
The location of this was on the, I think it's 89A, the highway to the Grand Canyon, north of Flagstaff.
On the west side of the...
Right,
of,
correct.
Yeah, so that's Highway 180, and the Forest Service station or offices are out that way. And so were you guys actually using chainsaws?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were chopping trees.
I'm assuming they were big, heavy things.
Oh, yeah. No, we were all young men and then one, we'd take turns. We always had somebody on the radio.
Okay.
Because of firefights.
Okay.
If there was a fire, we would drop everything, jump in the car, and go off and fight the fire.
So this was back in the days of stamping out all forest fires. And so if there was
correct.
A fire, you'd go after it.
They would call us and say, we want you to go and fight this fire. I remember the toughest one was up on Mount Eldon.
Oh, wow.
We had to climb up a steep mountain to get to the head of the fire to try to stop it from growing any further.
Wow.
And and then we put out a couple of fires that were caused by the railroad sparks.
Oh, wow.
And so it was all.
And so the fire tools you had, did you have a Pulaski, the sort of rake kind of chopping tool to make line?
Oh, yeah. In those days, I could have told you they all had names.
Okay, yeah, yeah,
You had every tool that you use was given a name.
Okay.
And they had tools for fighting fires, and we always had the tools in the vehicle. We had a carry-all that had the tools there, and when we were called into the car, we'd go and then we'd grab the tools and go out and fight the fire.
Okay.
And then if the fire wasn't too big, then we'd go back to our job and continue chopping trees.
Okay. And it must have been really lovely to get away from Phoenix from the summer heat for a change.
Exactly. Exactly.
I would think that would be very nice. What are your memories of the town of Flagstaff, that would have been the summer of 1960 or 61, when 1960, I think, is that right?
Well, it would have been, I graduated in the summer of 60 from Brophy.
Okay, so we've been summer of 1960.
This would have been the summer of 61.
Oh, okay.
Because I went to Phoenix College, signed up to Phoenix College. This was a summer job at Phoenix from Phoenix College. So after that job was done, I went back to school at Phoenix College, and I believe, I'm trying to remember, I think it was just 61, but it could have been 62 that I worked there also. But 61, I remember that while we were fighting, we went in and grabbed the newspaper every morning and would grab something to eat for lunch. And the newspaper headline was Marilyn Monroe had died.
Oh, my gosh. Huh.
So that would be the year that we were in Flagstaff.
Okay.
Whatever year Marilyn Monroe died, because I remember that's when we heard about it, when in the summer of that year.
Okay. What other memories do you have about that time in Flagstaff?
Oh, we'd go to dances at, what's that place above Lake Mary?
Mormon, I was thinking of that, the Mormon Lodge.
That's right. It's a lodge.
Yeah, yeah. A Mormon Lake Lodge, I think, maybe?
Yeah, I think that's what it's called, Mormon Lake Lodge, yeah. And we used to go there to dances.
Okay, wow.
So we were all single.
Okay.
And we would all go to dances there at that place and...
What dances were you dancing? Was that square dancing or sort of a country swing kind of thing?
No, just the dances of the time.
Okay.
They usually had a Western direction to them.
Okay.
But generally speaking, they were nothing fancy. It was just there wasn't any square dances. No, nothing like that. This was ballroom dancing.
Okay. And was there a live band?
I think there was.
Oh, wow.
I think there was.
Okay.
And we would go, I remember Mormon Lake, I met a lifelong friend who I still keep up with, who also was running for Miss Yee. Miss Yee had three rooms on the second floor.
Okay.
And the three of us from Phoenix rented one room. And then I met the other two rooms were individuals who were running for Miss Yee. Morris Holthaus was one of them.
Okay.
And
Holthouse? Holthaus?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hause. Holthaus.
Okay.
And he now lives in Flagstaff. He was a great hunter. Came out of Kansas, was working for the railroad.
Huh.
Young man. First time away from home, but we were all young. We were all 18, 19 years old, and
uh-huh.
We were all, Miss Yee only rented to young men. I didn't want any fights, I guess, with the girls.
So, uh-huh, sure, sure.
She all of us were had our own rooms. There were three rooms up in the second floor, and Miss Yee, of course, had the bottom floor, and... But Flagstaff was a great place.
Now you would have come into that with some pretty good skills of hunting, learned from your cousins. Where did you go hunting that summer, around the Flagstaff area?
No, I didn't.
You didn't. Okay.
I didn't. I did hunt in high school for rabbits. I used to go up to Carefree, hunt rabbits up there.
Okay.
But the hunting thing, don't forget, if you hunted deer, javelina, those were in season.
Got
and
it.
None of them were in season during the summer.
Okay. And I'm assuming that this was food for the table, too. It wasn't just hunting for fun.
Absolutely.
But, yeah.
No, everything we killed, we ate.
Okay.
And the Morris Holthaus, the guy I met,
yeah,
was a super hunter.
Okay.
I mean, he had come in from Kansas, but the guy got what they call the Big Ten.
Wow.
Which is lions, bears, and he would later become a worldwide hunter. If you go to his house today, he's got a room full of heads from all over the world that he's killed.
Okay.
But he started there in Flagstaff. hunting, and it wasn't long before he got what they call the Big Ten,
okay,
which is lions, bears, buffalo, Morris worked for the railroad for many years, eventually ended up working for the mines.
Okay.
He was a railroad expert. All of his jobs associated with getting material from one end to another through the railroad.
And, of course, back then the railroads were used extensively out of Flagstaff to bring the timber into the mill.
That's correct.
So he would have been, he would have had some skills that were needed.
And he was the same age as we were.
Okay.
18, 19 years old. And then there was another guy that was a son of a rancher that had the other ranch. But we weren't that close to this other guy. But to Morris, he was a very easygoing person. He liked hunting. He loved all. He was the number one womanizer anywhere in the world, I would say.
Okay. I want to go back for a second and ask you, where did you learn to ballroom dance? Was that something that was assumed that high school kids would do that?
No,
where did that come from?
St. Mary's Grammar School, the nuns would teach you. The girls would be on one side, the men were the other. And I learned to ballroom dance at St. Mary's Grammar School.
Wow.
And then when I got to high school, the CYO, Catholic Youth Organization, would have regular dances on a regular basis here in Phoenix.
Okay. Did you like that?
Oh, yeah, no. That was our social life. Today,
it seems like it'd be a great way to meet young women.
Oh, absolutely. The other way I just was telling somebody else was Cruising Central. Don't forget, I went to an all-boys high school.
Okay.
Now, grammar school was boys and girls, but Brophy was an all-boys school, and the girls' school was at the other end of the football field. So the CYO was our only chance to officially meet girls. Catholic Youth Organization was called.
Okay.
And they would have dances on a regular basis for the high school kids.
So wait a minute. This Cruising Central Avenue, tell me about that. What was that like?
Oh, that was the big thing. Everybody, the girls would get it all in a car, and the boys would get all in a car, and they would drive up and down Central Avenue.
Okay.
And, of course, a group of guys would come up to a group of girls, and the guys would be screaming at them. And hollering, they would holler back, and this was a form of socializing for, and then every once in a while you'd see cars parked, like at Park Central, there'd be a group of high school kids there getting together, and after a hard night of Cruising Central, most people would end up at Bob's Big Boy.
Okay.
On Central and Thomas Road. And for a Bob's Big Boy, and of course it was full of high school kids.
Nice. Huh. Very nice. Oh, gee, some things just, it brings me back a little bit. This is very fun.
Yeah.
Huh. And did you have a car? Were you driving? When did you learn to drive?
When I turned 16.
Okay.
I was not a car enthusiast. My enthusiasm lay in the wilderness, but...
Okay.
I had they wouldn't buy me a Jeep, but my parents bought me a Ford station wagon.
Okay.
That I thought was a Jeep. I got stuck a lot.
It didn't have a four-wheel drive Jeep, a station wagon at the time. Okay.
Huh. Two-wheel station wagon, and I was pulled out a lot.
Oh, my gosh. Where would you go to get stuck? Like everywhere.
One of the most famous was they were building the Black Canyon Freeway to
yes.
Flagstaff.
Yep.
And I decided, I think it was completed up to the road from to Sedona.
Okay.
Where today you take that road to Sedona and the Black Canyon continues up to Flagstaff.
That's right.
Well, they had at the time they had built the road just right up to that point.
Okay.
And maybe a little bit farther north, but not much. And it was they had cleared the way, and I took that road and got stuck just on the other side of that ranch that's out there.
Stoneman Lake area is.
Now it's called. It's a very famous, he was a lobbyist, and a very famous person owned the ranch.
Hmm.
It wasn't very far past, after you got off, you know, you climb from there, you climb up on top of the rim.
Yep.
And you get up into the and into the snow area, into the pine trees.
Yes, yes, okay.
And the first lone ranch you reach.
Oh right, it's not Munn's Park, but there's a spread there on the that the highway goes by. Yeah.
That's correct. That spread.
Okay.
And we went, and that was all dirt, mud road.
Okay.
And I got stuck there.
Oh my gosh! How did you get out?
And I, lucked out. There, a Jeep, four-wheel Jeep, came by. They pulled the chain on me and pulled me back to where the road was still paved, and I got out.
Okay.
But we were covered in mud. I remember getting a motel in Sedona to try to clean up.
Oh my gosh.
But there were many cases of, I always thought my Ford station wagon could go anywhere, and I always managed to get out, but I got stuck a lot. But that vehicle served to get me around in Phoenix, plus again, I always thought it was I thought it would go anywhere, and it didn't.
You know, Frank, this might be a really good place to put a comma in this oral history series here, because the next question
sure.
I want to ask you, I think, is about your first journey to the Grand Canyon, and I think that's going to open up some things we might want to talk for quite a while about. In the material we have just covered today, is there anything that you wanted to mention that I didn't ask you about?
No, I think, you know, a 10,000-mile view of my life as a youngster, we pretty well covered it.
Yeah, yeah, from the 30,000-foot level, flying quickly.
Correct.
Okay, lovely. Well, with that, this will conclude part one of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Frank Barrios. And I don't think I mentioned when we started, Frank spells his last name Barrios. Today is Saturday, January 28th, 2023. And Frank, thank you so very, very much.
Thank you. And I think we've scheduled a meeting for tomorrow.
Hang on a second, Frank.